Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to our weekly edition of 52 Players. Frank McKay here. So much more importantly, the Marble Fawn is our very special guest. And if anyone remembers the documentary, the Marble Fawn of Gray Gardens, I believe, and again, it went into a musical, and the inspiration behind that is a wonderful sculptor, I should say, and artist. And now he's an author, and he was the subject of the show and the documentary. I mean, what a brilliant man and a brilliant talent this guy has. And he started out on Long Island, went to Sachem High School for a while. And Jerry Torrey is our very special guest. One of the great stories in America. One of the great stories, certainly, that came off of Long Island. Jerry Torrey, how are you?
Good, Frank. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, everyone who's listening. It's very nice of you to have me on the radio. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, listen, if you don't mind, let's go into your story.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever get sick of telling it, but so many millions of people know your story, but there are millions who should know it who don't know it. But it's absolutely wonderful. Start from the beginning. Where were you born and where were you raised?
Thank you. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, of Italian family. We're all the Italians. And when I went to high school out in Long Island, Sachem, I had roots out in Long Island. My godfather had property out there. He was a mason and a very handy contractor. Built a house out at Holbrook, Long Island, and I helped him. I assisted him in constructing the house. I was just a kid. But we started out in Brooklyn, and he was excellent at influencing me in stone and working with it. And I'll give you an example. In Brooklyn, they were renovating the streets, and all the cobblestones they were ripping up from the pavement, they were covering with pavement, but the stones he would take to his Long Island property. And on a Saturday morning, I'd sit with him on a pail, removing and making level the stones so he could incorporate them into this house that's still standing. And it was just a labor, and it wasn't fun, and I was just a kid, but he introduced me to stone in a way that you had to understand it from one point of view, and that is, in 1963, the World's Fair showed up here in Queens. Mm-hmm. My mother, God bless her, took me there. We were traveling through the Vatican Pavilion,
And
there was Michelangelo's Pietà was there. And my mother, clasping my hand, said, "This is the mother of Jesus with her son." And I, of course, remember how much I toiled on working the granite cobblestones with the hammer. And I said to my mother, "Is that made of the same stone Uncle Freddie and I are building his house with?" And she smiled at yes. And it was from that moment, you know something, Frank? It was the moment that I realized you could carve something out of such a difficult material and prove something so tender and gentle out of it, which was sort of a reflection of my very life as it had begun. So stone carving was introduced to me from those first years of experiencing with my mason builder godfather, Fred Lungo, in Long Island.
Well, let me ask you something. He got these stones, the cobblestones. Basically, the city, I guess, was ripping it up, or the borough of Brooklyn was ripping up the street
right.
in order to pave it. So they were throwing
right.
out all of these cobblestones. And what would they normally do with it? Would they just end up being crushed or turned into dust? Or what would happen to the cobblestones if your uncle, let's say, didn't take them?
I see. Well, they would have to remove the cobblestones to rebuild the infrastructure. That would include the sewer and water and subway system throughout New York City. And it had to be, it was paved. The city was once originally only paved with cobblestones, which didn't allow for good traction on rubber tires, and neither with horses' hooves or wagon wheels. It wasn't a good surface for any of that. So the city decided to remove it, patch it over, and cover it with asphalt. And removing the stone, well, they would discard it in large piles and then eventually grind it for gravel, and blue chip gravel is actually the stone that you see at Home Depot that's ground up granite block, and it's more, it's useful as a driveway and so on, and plant beds. The material was not discarded. It was just plenty of it, so it was put on the side until further use. And they did use it. They still use it. And as a matter of fact, some of that granite that you see, for instance, on Long Beach, Long Island, on the Atlantic Ocean, those, you know, the stone barriers, the breakers on the beach?
Yes.
Those breakers, those huge boulders, are from New York City. They were chunks of the earth removed to build the New York City subway system. And those breakers are the very material, well, not that size, of course, but the same material I was working with as a young man. And that's where the material was used. New York City recycled it and used it for various projects. This particular project, my uncle, a conscientious man, built a farmhouse. It's like a fortress, Frank. It's still there, wow, standing, and beautiful home on 3 acres of property. He's a craftsman and excellent work, a teacher.
Amazing.
That's what they did. Stone. Yeah.
Well, let me remind folks, if they're just tuning in a little late or just turning on their radios, Frank McKay here with Jerry Torrey, sculptor, artist, and it just goes so far beyond that. He became a cult figure after his story came out in documentary form, and the story touches on everyone from Aristotle Onassis to First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis and relatives of her, and it is just an unbelievable story that should always be told. And it is if you wrote it in Hollywood, you probably wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe that it was a true story, and it really is. Jerry Torrey is our very special guest. He's nice enough to sit with us and retell the story probably for the millionth time, but I appreciate it. The Marble Faun of Grey Gardens, he became known as the Marble Faun. And Jerry, let me ask you this. What was the first thing you remember carving or making out of these cobblestones, and how large was it?
That's a good question. And it was, as you mentioned earlier, a moment ago, it is most difficult to explain what I'm going to share with you about Grey Gardens and the legacy and the history of that particular portion of my life, including Mrs. Onassis and Mr. Onassis and the family and the book that I just finished writing, The Marble Faun of Grey Gardens. My first stone sculpture was marble, and I was on a beach here. There was a woman reclining, but she was with her head in her knees and her hair draped down her back, just relaxing, like fiddling with the sand in front of her feet, like just relaxed on the sand. And I was most impressed with her physique, but the beauty of her shoulders and the hair lying on her shoulders and her back. It was that subject, Frank, that turned me on. I said, I want to try to carve that in a stone as fine as this woman's physique. And that's where the catalyst began. So I did, and that was my first piece. It was a nude, but a woman reclining, her face in her knees, her hair on her back, and her hands wrapped around her head. So she was sort of like introverted posture, but of a very sensitive and finite finish. The stone became very translucent. I polished it to a high degree. That was my first sculpture, and it was of that woman. About 300 pounds Carrara marble, and I just flew through it. I worked in the hallway of my friend's apartment building in New York City. I didn't have a studio. I had a few boxes to place the stone on, a hammer and chisel, which I still own 40 years later, the originals, and I carved that first piece. And I've been carving since 1987.
Where was that piece?
That was, I sold that in the East Village about 25 years ago. A person just fell in love with it, and I was glad that they liked it enough to want to buy it. Yeah. So I sold it, and I've done more sculptures since then of figures. Some are anatomically incorrect, a little bit not. Some are figures based on my imagination. One is dedicated to Mrs. Beale and Edie. It's called Pairs of Two.
Is that little Edie or Big Edie?
Mrs. Beale is the elder, and Little Edie, Miss Beale, was the younger, referred to as Little Edie. Mrs. Beale was always, often enough, referred to as Mrs. Beale, the elder, the mother.
Okay.
Yeah. And, well, I'm going to tell you how that all began, because I stand here almost 50 years later, and I'm the only witness left to that moment in time. There were other people, but I was really young then, a 16-year-old. And for years, let me tell you, Frank, I would just wonder how on earth would I explain this story, this situation I was involved with, without people thinking that I was completely out of my mind for the facts of this story, where they lived, who they were related to, the conditions in which they lived. They had a 28-room mansion on the Atlantic Ocean.
Wow.
And Mrs. Beale and Edie stayed in that mansion for a good 20 years, 25, without ever leaving the house. And 28 rooms and very little money. They didn't have anywhere to put the garbage, and so they would stash it, store it, and hide it around in the mansion. But it was a time warp. It looked like the Munster's house inside. It was fascinating. Time had stopped at Grey Gardens. Cobwebs covered vestibule and furniture, and I was brazen enough to trespass that summer day, and my life has never been the same. That was the first day I walked onto the property. It's all in the book, and I'm rushing you here because I'm excited, yes, but too, there's so much to this story that I'm trying to make points of light, which would make sense to the listener.
Well, let's tell everyone where to get the book. Everyone, it's a must book. The story is unbelievable, and you can finally read about it in a book. Give us the exact title, and tell everyone where to get it.
Okie doke. The book's title is The Marble Faun of Grey Gardens. It's a memoir of the Beales, the Maisels brothers, and Jacqueline Kennedy. It's written by myself, Jerry Torrey, Tony Maeda. It's available at Amazon and on the internet. It's Quarell Press, Querelle Press. And it's available, again, on Amazon, and it's available at Barnes & Nobles, and again, The Marble Faun of Grey Gardens by Jerry Torrey and Tony Maeda. It's been out since February of 2018. It took years to get it all in one place. It's quite a story of a life that we all have known, sometimes a little more extreme than others, but my life is a testament that one can actually make sense of it if they have very little to work with, and follow your heart and be truthful to yourself and those you love. It really worked. My life really finally bloomed.
Yeah.
And it started with Grey Gardens. It was the mansion alone drew me in. Would you like me to tell you a little about the mansion?
I would, but actually, before you do, again, Jerry Torrey, sculptor extraordinaire, and he's the Marble Faun of Grey Gardens. That's the name of the book also. Everyone, get the book. It's a must. Get two of them. Get one for yourself and get one for somebody who is absolutely someone that would love the American dream, because this is something. I mean, this man grew up in a chaotic situation too, and he took off, from what I understand, if I'm not misremembering this. You ran away from home, from your home in Holbrook, and you ended up in East Hampton. I guess you had a relative. Well, tell us what happened, if you don't mind. Tell us a little bit about what happened.
No, I don't mind. I was a student at Sachem High School. I was finishing high school there. My parents had lived at, we live in Holbrook. My parents decided to leave Brooklyn, for it was getting difficult living in Brooklyn and so on. So we were four boys. We moved there for about a year, where I finished high school. My father was heavy-handed and very strict with me, and I had ideas that he didn't agree with, so I took off. I was a 15-year-old. My forte was gardening, and I learned that from my uncle, as I had mentioned. Friends in high school owned a little fishing cottage in Amagansett, New York, where they said, well, you finish high school, come out here, and you can live with in the house on the bay, which was magic. And then, of course, you need to get a job. So I did. I applied for a job in East Hampton, and I found a job as an assistant gardener for Mr. Gerald Geddes on Lily Pond Lane, a very wealthy fellow, and the beautiful property. And I was his assistant gardener. His property was easy to maintain. I just keep the leaves out of the swimming pool and twigs off the lawn. But it was one afternoon after landing that job that I rode my bicycle down a country road that I had not yet ridden. And on my left, I lost footing on my bicycle. I turned left and I stumbled because I was not paying attention. Here was this mansion completely covered with vines, except for one peak of one bedroom. There was a Cadillac in the driveway, barely visible. And I just said, what? And I stumbled. There was nothing like it in East Hampton. Mind you, Frank, all the mansions are one more beautiful than the next. So when I saw Gray Gardens, unknown to me then, the name, that has a whole history unto itself. I said, what is this house doing here? It looked like it came out of a dark movie, a horror movie. It was wonderful and overgrown, and time had stopped. There's many photos of it in the book, The Marble Faun of Gray Gardens. And I am so strongly attached to the property and my history and my love for that family there. They were so good to me. Residing in the mansion, well, the following night I went back and I saw the lights on in the mansion. And I made up my mind to the following morning to actually trespass onto the property, past the automobile that was surrendered into the garden for years, covered with trees and vines. The key was still in the ignition. It's been there since, 1940. Then I knocked on the diamond-shaped window, and I looked in. There were cobwebs draped from the ceiling to the banister to the chairs and tables. There was a path worn through those cobwebs in which a young Edie Beale, who is present in her film Gray Gardens, descends the stairs to collect the garbage and pick up the groceries that are delivered. There's a tunnel through the cobwebs, which she had passed through the years. And there, of course, was a little cave in which she would travel back upstairs to where she lived with her mother. It was a time warp. The interior was fascinating because of the presence of nature and the lack of maintenance. That was just a brief, a little walkthrough about the house the first day I met the mansion.
Can I just interrupt to ask you why?
Yes,
why was it in such a disrepair? Or why was it like that? Were they just eccentric? Were they, why was the garbage not being thrown out, or why was it being stored? What was the reason for that?
I see. Basically, funds contributed to the lack of preservation, maintenance, heating. There was no money to pay for the gardeners. There was no longer someone to drive the car. There was very little money to even eat. For instance, they were very poor in a very rich area of the world. There was no funds, so they didn't know what to do with the garbage. Everything was paid for. You had to pay for the private sanitation. So what they do, what anyone else would have might have done if they didn't know how to dispose of it, put it in the kitchen, the basement, and slowly through the years, the rooms cluttered up with household garbage, including cat food cans emptied. They had a collection of cats that were as unusual as the setting itself. They also didn't have a gardener, so the property quickly grew over, and the vines just encompassed the mansion quickly, and through the years there was a jungle of wisteria and bittersweet vines covering the house. it was something only nature could preserve. It was wonderful in that sense. It was a combination of Mrs. Beale, the elder, and her daughter's behavior, which was, no kidding, eccentric, but also unique in the sense that both women adored music and theater. And mind you, Mrs. Beale was a Bouvier. Mrs. Beale's brother was Jacqueline Kennedy's father, Black Jack Bouvier. And mind you, they were silver spoon fed, and they were very brilliant people and literate. And they were used to living a certain way of life that once money ran out, they didn't have access to. So there, Mrs. Beale was quite flirtatious with music and her life. And Mr. Beale, from what I understand, just about had it with her, you know, goings on and being creative and dancing and singing at weddings. And he gave Mrs. Beale an ultimatum, which she, of course, was so independent and turned it down to, like, sort of ship up and act like a lady, or he was leaving her. And I think he did finally divorce, although I'm not sure if that's legal, was legal then. So she lived out the rest of her life in a 28-room mansion given to her as a wedding gift.
Wow.
Yep, in East Hampton. The most palatially beautiful properties and the sound of the ocean. And it was, it's, you know, Hampton's just high-end property.
Sure. East Hampton.
You know?
Just amazing. Let me interrupt once again. Jerry Torrey is the voice that you're hearing. And again, he is the marble fawn of Grey Gardens, and just an amazing story. And if you've walked away, or if you stepped away for a second, let me remind everyone that you're listening to our weekly edition of 52 Players. Frank McKay here with Jerry Torrey. Grew up in Long Island, on Long Island, and in the Sachem School District. Ran away from home, ended up in East Hampton. And amazingly enough, ran into the relatives of Jackie Onassis, Kennedy Onassis, the former first lady, and all types of things started from there. Get the book. The book is a must, everyone. It's the marble fawn of Grey Gardens, and Jerry Torrey is the author of that and the subject of that, and you know, so much more than just Jerry Torrey, but just an amazing, brilliant sculptor. And if you're fortunate enough to get one of his pieces, hold on to it. And it's for generations and generations to come, it'll be a conversation piece, that's for sure. Frank McKay here with Jerry Torrey. Jerry, back to Little Edie. Did Little Edie ever marry?
No, Little Edie didn't marry. And most of the time, God bless her, she was so devoted to her mother. And Edie, Little Edie, referred to as, was most affectionate towards her mother and lived most of her years with her mother in the mansion, cut off from society and frankly, poverty. No, she never married, although she had dated Joe Kennedy and she had dated Howard Hughes. She actually had a relationship with my then employer, Mr. Gerald Geddes, and they had history together as well. No, she didn't ever get married. She was dating a man named Eugene Oblensky, a Polish descendant and person of historical reference. But no, she didn't marry. But she always blamed her mother for not having the chances to do things that people normally would do it, you know, being a wonderful looking, she was a beautiful woman, Edie, and a model. She was, well, frankly, they did a musical based on the movie Grey Gardens by Albert David Maisels. If you're interested in this subject, may I suggest starting with the movie Grey Gardens by Albert and David Maisels?
And David passed away, didn't he? Did David pass away or Albert passed away?
Yes, Dave, God bless him. He did pass away. Oh, boy, I would say 10 years or so. Maybe I'm wrong. And Albert, unfortunately, maybe 4 years ago, he and I were very close. We became very close towards the end of his life. But we had separated for maybe 40 years. And this is one of the stranger parts of my life. I used to drive a New York City taxi. And one night I pick up a fare on 9th Avenue. She has a tripod and a camera. And I pick her up, ask her where she's going, and also ask her if she's in the film industry. She said, yes. And I said, well, have you ever heard of a film called Grey Gardens? She said, yes, it's a world-famous documentary. I said, well, I'm Jerry from that documentary. She stopped, leaned forward on the partition in the cab and said, yes, you are Jerry, and told me that Albert Mazels was looking for me for 40 years, that she was just working with him just a week earlier on a charcoal briquette commercial, film commercial. And he and I reunited the following day. He told me after that many years, guess what, Jerry? They're doing a musical, a play based on Mrs. Beale and Edie's film, Grey Gardens. And I just chuckled as he did. But guess what? They did. The play became a musical, won several Tony Awards. And a young man portrayed me on a Broadway stage. The very nights I would drive by the theater in Manhattan, there was somebody playing me on a stage on Broadway. Quagmire, amazing. Example of my life. It's just something as odd as that.
That's amazing.
You know?
Well, just really an amazing situation, an amazing story. Not bad for a kid who ran away at 16 years old and had to figure out how to get through life after that. What were you thinking, if you don't mind, what were you thinking as you were leaving home? Did you have any money in your pocket? Or how much money did you have, if you had anything?
Oh, I was a kid. I had, maybe if I had $20, that was a lot. I didn't have any money. I did know I wanted my freedom. And my father, although he gave us everything, he was a strict disciplinarian, a heavy-handed fellow. I love him and still and always will. But I could no longer tolerate his strict rules and, you know, disciplinary ways. So I ran. I didn't have any money. But frankly, I knew the only thing I knew, Frank, is that I had to survive. I didn't know how. I knew when I was hungry, I would need to eat. And I unfortunately had to stoop sometimes to stealing food from supermarket and actually cooking things out in the woods. We lived in Long Island. I built a little shelter out of sticks and debris and lived in a short area of woods. And I just managed. It was through Billy, my friend in high school, that I got the job and a place to live in Amagansett. And I would bicycle to work. That was a treasure because as an assistant gardener, I made $100 a week, room and board, and I had my freedom and the kitchen below my bedroom. So I had food too. It was really a fun experience on a palatial estate in East Hampton. I didn't have two nickels, my friend. And the sneakers I wore them to the ground. You know what I mean? That's how poor I was. I didn't know anything, but I knew that I had a soul, and I knew that I could make it if I was decent with the people I encountered. So I picked that up from my mother. I was always good to people as I would like them to be good to me. And it's taken me through the darkest and loneliest years. There's no kidding that I have earned everything I have, every shoelace and every meal. I did run away, and it was one of the reasons I wrote the book, Frank, because if someone who's reading this book is perhaps heavy-handed toward their child or their relative, or perhaps if that kid gets in trouble with liquor and drugs, or has nowhere to live and gives up and feels lonely and hopeless, that if you keep yourself organized in your mind, you can break barriers and you can survive the world's most difficult circumstances. And I'm a witness to that. You can actually make a life and be decent about it and enjoy your life, even if all the odds are against you. And one of the reasons I wrote the book, besides the fascinating Mrs. Beale and her daughter Edie Beale in my book, The Marble Faun of Grey Gardens, that's an interesting topic, and I could talk to you till the sunrise about them. But besides that wonderful history of my life. It was the determination and knowing that there is light and it would be better and that I would overcome the many circumstances I found myself in, which are in the book. And I'm glad I'm sitting here able to speak to you about it, Frank, and whoever's listening. Thank you.
Yeah. Let me remind them. I know you mentioned the book, but let me just urge everyone to get the book. It's just the most unbelievable story. And again, one of the great stories to ever come out, but certainly Long Island based story. You're not going to get much better than this. And I know a lot of our listeners are here on Long Island, where I'm from. I know there's others listening for all over the country, but Jerry Torrey, sculptor extraordinaire, is our very special guest. And what a brilliant sculptor he is. Brilliant artist, and he's the marble fawn of Grey Gardens, and that's the name of the book. It's a memoir of Jerry, and you must get it. You absolutely must get it. Frank McKay here with Jerry Torrey, and the documentary is just it has such a cult following to it, and people all over the place have seen this, including myself, have seen this documentary, and again, the marble fawn of Grey Gardens. Also, a show. Was it a Broadway, off-Broadway? What was it? It was a musical, I know. But
it actually began as an off-Broadway production at Playwrights Horizons, and it ran over the season. It was so well received that after the musical opened on 42nd Street, it went to Broadway with Christine Ebersole and Mary Louise Wilson and Matt Cavanaugh, fine actresses and actors. It went from off-Broadway to Broadway, and then HBO picked it up, the theme, the story, and made a movie called Grey Gardens with Drew Barrymore and Jessica Lange, which was quite well done and exceptionally pretty with the music. I thought it was great. They went ahead and made a HBO film. Several productions of the musical have traveled everywhere. Frank, my friend, the musical opened in South America. It's presently underway in Oslo, Norway. It's been produced in Italy and Spain. Even in China, they did the musical Grey Gardens based on the film that I'm in, and I'm proud to say that as a teen. And then I think you should see, if you're interested in any of these subjects, from Mrs. Onassis to Mrs. Beale to Albert Maysles to life itself. It's all that story. It's there.
Yeah. An amazing one. Absolutely amazing story.
I'm honored. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm honored to have you, and it really is a wonderful story. Tell us a little something about Jacqueline Onassis. Did you get to know her well?
I met her once, and I didn't get to know her well, but it was the beginning of a revelation, Frank. I had, until this that afternoon, did not know any history of Mrs. Beale, except her last name was Beale, and I didn't even know she was a Bouvier. The town of East Hampton decided to make a clause. They had they went down to Mrs. Beale's mansion, Grey Gardens, and they made it clear that the mansion was inappropriate and unsuitable for human habitation, which many seem to say that it was. Never mind, they had 10 ultimatum days to clean and renovate this 28-room mansion that was filled with raccoons as well as cats and debris. It was a haunted house in that sense. It was that time I was smoking cigarettes in my youth. I went out to the porch because I began cleaning the mansion as dictated by the Board of Health for the Southeast Hampton Township, Brookhaven Township. And I had a cigarette. I was smoking on the front lawn, and I see a car pull up on the borderline of the property. And I stand up and I put the cigarette down in the grass, and I'm stepping on it with my sneaker. And I look. And I look, and there's a pathway. A fellow used to cut the lawn named Brooks. And I'm looking, and I simply couldn't stop shaking. It was Mrs. Kennedy Onassis walking towards me. I was in a sweatshirt with a dilapidated mansion standing behind me. And I knew who it was because 9 years earlier in my life, I was in a Catholic school when we were instructed to kneel and pay and pray for the slain President Kennedy. So I know exactly who this woman was, this person looking me, walking right towards me. And I was dumbfounded. I just stood there. Mrs. Onassis took her glasses off and gazed at the mansion in disbelief. She looked at the trees and the property, and then she looked at me and extended her arm and said, "You must be Jerry. My aunt and cousin have grown very fond of you. They trust you. It's a wonder that you're even allowed on the porch, no less living in the mansion." And I was completely frozen. I didn't know what to say, except I was here. I'm here to help in any way I can. And that's the first time I met Mrs. Kennedy Onassis. She was very, very elegant and soft-spoken. I think she found me humorous because I was just Jerry. And I think she was comfortable talking to me. She made it clear. Edie had come down from the second floor, and they had a little bit of a heated discussion on the front porch. I was actually glad that both women went onto the porch so I could actually light up another cigarette. I was so nervous. But they did. And after that discussion, Mrs. Onassis came briefly back to me and said that I was to expect renovations being made on the house, and people were going to come by to help clean out the mansion and do some work, electrical work and plumbing and such. And my instructions were to let them in and help coordinate any activity into the mansion.
Who gave the instructions? Mrs. Onassis?
Yes. And the Board of Health was with her. Some two other fellows were with her down on the porch with Edie. But Mrs. Onassis specifically spoke to me and said that I was to coordinate and help open the kitchen door so the contractors could help out cleaning and electrical work, even reshingling the southwestern portion of the mansion, which was torn apart by raccoons invading the house. So it had to be, there had to be someone there to help coordinate it. And I'm glad I was there, because some of the young contractors, well, they were young, and they would do things like put cigarette butts out in the living room floors, and I have to ask them not to do that. This is someone's house, because it was deplorable, but it was still Mrs. Beale and Edie's house. So I was glad I was there to help keep them youngsters from being too disrespectful. And that began our friendship. That was the first time I met Mrs. Onassis. And I'll tell you, it was the thrill of a lifetime. It was just an honor. She was quite elegant, beautiful, big brown eyes, and very gentle. And Edie and Mrs. Beale, it all made sense to me, Frank. Now I knew what the word Bouvier meant. Now I knew exactly how she was related, although I found out more interesting facts later. I just then understood, boy, this is a big-time American family. This is a legacy. I'm just friends with a wonderful group of unusual characters. And it was a thrill. It really was. Amazing. And they began filming the movie Grey Gardens, which my book is based upon, The Marble Faun of Grey Gardens, by Tony Maeda, my co-author, and me, Jerry Torrey. So
amazing.
I feel great talking with you, Frank, because I'm finally relaxed that I've gotten a feel for you, who you are, and how easy it is to converse with you.
Well, listen, I'm thrilled. I look forward to a part two. We're just about out of time, but let me urge everyone to get The Marble Faun of Grey Gardens. The story, as you can tell here, is just incredible, and it is just, it's an amazing story. If they tried to write it in Hollywood, they can succeed, that's for sure, but they could never succeed in letting you think that it's a true story. It's just an unbelievable story, and it's a success story. It's about sculptor, and let's not lose that in all of this. Just an amazing artist and sculptor, Jerry Torrey. He's also an author now, and Frank McKay here with Jerry. Go ahead, Jerry.
May I mention my website,
please? Yes.
And the gallery
absolutely
that represents my artwork. The gallery that represents my work is called Situations Gallery on Henry Street in New York City, 127 Henry Street. And the gallery is www.situations.us. And my website for art is jerrythemarblefawn.com. And Jackie Kemplay is the owner of the gallery, and Tony Maeda is my co-author. Ted O'Ryan Shepherd is my PR man, and we're doing really good. We're a good team, and everyone's been wonderful to work with. It's been a happy few years of my life. I'm glad to be alive. And that's the links, the situations, the gallery, and the website for the book.
What a story. And what a talent. And I'm just thrilled and honored to be talking to you about this. And I've tried to get you a long time ago. I just never been able to connect with you. And one of the great Long Island stories, and I say that because I'm a Long Islander at heart and in reality. I grew up on Long Island and lived most of my life here.
And
the fact that and I know you're a citizen of the world now, and but still, it started out on Long Island, and what a story it is. Jerry Torrey, again, is our very special guest. We got about a minute left, and again, he's just a wonderful sculptor. And the name of the book is The Marble Fawn of Gray Gardens, and it's a memoir. Everyone buy the book. It's an absolute. Check out the documentary, which was made many years ago, but just it has such a cult following. And I'm going to ask you one more time to give your website, Jerry. I know you just gave it, but anyone who's not driving, write it down, try to remember it, whatever. But Jerry, give your website one more time.
It's Jerry, J-E-R-R-Y, themarblefawn.com. Just that's one word, Jerry, themarblefawn.com. The gallery is called Situations Gallery in New York City, 127 Henry Street. It's www.situations.us. And that's the gallery with the art. And I do ceramics, too. They're available there at the gallery. And the book is a project of where I love writing the book. It's a wonderful history, and I love sharing it for many, many reasons. And I sure hope those who heard this conversation are as happy to be alive as I am to share it. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, listen, I certainly am, and I know others out there are. Jerry Torrey, again, has been our subject and our guest on 52 Players. Jerry, thank you very much. Congratulations on all the success and just for writing just a wonderful book, a must-read for everyone. Thank you very much for being here.
You're very welcome. Thanks so very much, Frank.
And I want to thank all of you for tuning in. Jerry Torrey, just an amazing artist and sculptor. And if you don't have to take my word for it, look him up online and check out his website. And check out the documentary, The Marble Fawn of Gray Gardens. And that's the name of the book. Buy his book. It's a must-read, and if you've been listening to us, you know that he was a runaway from Long Island, ended up in East Hampton, ultimately ended up in the relative of Jackie Kennedy Onassis, and ended up living in basically a mansion that was unkept for the longest time until Jackie Kennedy got contacted and kind of gave the word to get it fixed up. But you got to read the book. It's a must. The Marble Fawn of Gray Gardens. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you all next time on Breaking It Down.